Welcome to the Iron Basketball Podcast, the Pick and Troll Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. Matt Moore, it is over, under season, and I'll take the over on how much fun we'll have.
That is the zippiest, peppiest intro you have ever provided. That may have been the zippiest, peppiest sequence of words you've ever said in your life that did not involve a Jean-Claude Van Damme movie.
Since I was 12, for sure, yeah. I think around 12 I was like, oh, screw this world. I'm dead inside.
I'm dead inside. Good to get it over quickly.
Yeah, that's my advice to all you parents out there. Make sure your kids are dead inside at an early age so they can prepare for the world. This has been
speaking of the Brooklyn Nets.
Oh, wow.
And we're off.
So this is what we do every year, and we have a lot of fun doing it every year. And we're always really wrong every year for whatever reason. James Herbert is always right.
Always.
And I'd even say he cares about these over-under predictions less than I do. And I care about predictions a very small amount.
Like the ranking of how much we care about it is like I care the most, and then you don't really care, and then James really doesn't care. And Anand's like, did we do those? Right. So
James actively doesn't care. Like I'm just kind of like it doesn't cross my mind, and James is like actively like I don't want to care about these predictions. Yeah. So listen to this episode, enjoy the banter or the prognostications or whatever, and then just pay attention to what James does if you're going to bet these.
I think the key is that James, because he hedges so much, like you can talk him into almost anything. Mm-hmm. Like that's not true. You can't talk him into anything, but he'll concede almost any point. Like if we were talking about the Bulls yesterday, and I was like, well, you know, this and this, and he was like, yeah, like I mean, it could happen. Like I could see it. You know, if all these things that are not going to happen, then yeah, right. But I think that natural inclination, like, that averages things out to where he doesn't have as many extremes, unless it comes to the Bulls. But you'll have to wait to see how many wins he picked the Bulls for later.
It's a stunning amount. It really is. Even as someone who's not high on the Bulls, it's a stunning amount.
Yeah. So we're going to do over-unders for each team, and we're going to look at the divisions, and we're going to look at how many wins it's going to take to win the division, and kind of who's the favorite to win that division. These don't matter. You can bet on them. All these odds are provided by Westgate. If you have problems with Westgate, I don't want to hear about it. I used to use Bovada and everyone complained, so I started using Westgate because it's an actual book in Las Vegas, and now people complain that they stole them from somewhere else. I don't care. Westgate has very nicely presented odds that's easy for me to format. That's all I care about.
But Matt, what if I really want to get angry about something that doesn't matter? Could I then? I mean, what's the complaint here? That the odds were stolen, or that like it has like Indy for 44.5 and someone's like, it should be 43.5. This is ridiculous.
Yeah, it's just like there. Well, because these things are very, like, because of the money involved, people get very intense about it, and I understand that. For those that I guess do it professionally, which is not something I would ever do.
Why would you ever listen to us if you're doing this professionally?
Well, and just like, why would you like with the NBA? Like, why would you possibly like make gambling about the NBA into like Bob Vulgaris aside, because he's extremely intelligent. Like the rest of us morons, don't do that.
Right. I kind of treat Bob Vulgaris as like the when everyone sees a point guard who can't shoot, they're like, well, Jason Kidd learned how to shoot. It's like, sure, Jason Kidd's a Hall of Famer. So right, maybe this other guy will learn, but probably not.
I look forward to Bob Vulgaris' Hall of Fame speech.
He really should get in as a contributor.
That'd be amazing.
We should start this campaign.
So the Atlantic?
Let's start with the Atlantic. Won by your Toronto Raptors last year with 56 wins.
I was high on them, and they carried through for me. They had a fantastic season. So let's start with this. How many wins do you think it's going to take to win the division?
I mean, it's a pretty crap. Oh, no, it's not a crappy division. The Celtics are good now. I just got really excited about the Atlantic division. 52?
Yeah, so Vegas thinks that it's going to be 52 because the over-under for the Celtics is 51.5, and they're the odds-on favorite to win the – no respect for the Raptors.
Wow.
Zero respect for Toronto. With starting power forward Jaren Sullinger, I don't see how they're going to rue the day.
All right. I did look at this morning for a post when Dwayne Casey said that it's Sullinger's to lose. It makes sense to me. If only because Patrick Patterson off the bench is a hell of a weapon, right? And yeah. Patrick Patterson was a part of their three best lineups last year that included a lot of bench players mixed in with like Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan. So in that respect, it makes sense to me. But like, I don't know, maybe north of the border, he'll learn how to shoot, right? Like, maybe that's what it is. Maybe it's just been these American rims throwing him off. But he's not a good outside shooter. He does help them with the rebounding. But, yeah, I have questions on fit there.
My thing with the Raptors that I keep kind of coming back on, and I'm writing about this for Sunday, is I think it's very difficult to follow up a franchise season with another franchise season.
Yeah.
It's just very tough. It's very difficult if you do not have LeBron James or a player of that caliber to be like, we're going to have the best season that we've ever had in our team's history, and then the next season, we're going to do even better. That's really hard. Like, things came together for Toronto last year. They stayed healthy. The defense stayed intact until late in the year. They didn't make any sort of trade that disrupted the chemistry. They got contributions from key guys that were kind of – every year there are dudes that are kind of coin flips on whether or not they're going to have a good season or not. I think Spencer Hawes is kind of like this.
I like that.
Where you and I have long, long mocked Spencer Hawes for his contributions on the court. But then every so often he has a year where we're like, you know who's been really good? Spencer Hawes. And so it's kind of a coin flip of what it's – you want them on the court because they're – you know, if they're good, they're really helpful. It's just that they're not – every season, they're not always good. That consistency is how you become a good player and then a star player and then a superstar player. I think with Toronto, I do have questions. You know, there's a lot on JV this season. We talked about this earlier. Like, there's just a lot on JV this season. And yeah. I think that that's tricky. I think I will still... I've been going back and forth on who's gonna end up with more wins. Right now, I have the Raptors as just slightly ahead in winning the division. Let's talk about Boston's over-under. Their over-under is 51.5.
It's a lot of wins. What did they win, like 45 games last year?
48, I believe.
Oh, 48, wow.
They were part of that grouping that like all those teams won the same amount of games.
Right, yeah.
And then
the
tiebreakers went bonkers. Right. And that was like one of the most, that was a really fun sequence for me last season in track. Like,
with you doing the magic number every time.
And like everyone's like, Matt, you're gonna hurt yourself trying to figure this all out.
Someone asked me, they're like, hey, what's the tiebreaker situation? I was like, I don't know. I'm not stupid enough to track that. So, sorry, no offense.
Yeah. Go ask Matt. He
all right. So. Man,
I listened to the Locked On Celtics podcast yesterday with Jay King, and his argument was, you know, they added Al Horford, they've got more continuity, Jaylen Brown could contribute. Is that really not worth four more wins? And I was like, ooh, that's a
right. That's, I mean, I kind of think they overachieved last year.
Mm-hmm, me too.
So, so factoring that in is tough, right? It's like, how do you, man?
So the key here is Celtics fans are going to say, yeah, but you hate the Celtics. And I'm like, well, no, I was low on them. And like, an irrational Celtics fan would be like, yeah, but you're always low on them. And I'd say, all right, let's say I was low on them. Okay, and I was, obviously, because yeah. They won fewer games than I thought they would significantly. I thought they weren't going to be over 500. So they clearly cleared that bar by a huge margin. That doesn't mean that they didn't over-exceed. And kind of as a primer for everything we talk about, Zach and I have talked about this every year. We think that between 5 and 7 wins every year are kind of random.
Right.
It's just things go, and that can be losses too. Like the Celtics probably lost a few that they thought they were going to, but there's this margin of error where Joe Johnson, you know, the Nuggets, like Joe Johnson hits a fadeaway catch and shoot 0.08 buzzer beater. Like Brook Lopez versus the Warriors misses a bunny, right? Like right. These are the wins that the other team outplayed them, but the other team wound up winning. And it's just, these things are weird and happen, or an injury occurs or whatever. Sickness is another one that I've become really attuned to. Like we cover injuries. I think sickness might be worse than injuries for impacting actual team wins over a stretch.
Yeah, I agree with it. Yeah. I mean, these guys are sick all the time.
Yeah. For various reasons. So, so at 51.5, that feels a little high to me. I would not say I feel comfortable taking the under. It just feels a little high to me.
Yeah, this is a stay away for me with the Celtics. I've got them at 50 wins because I kind of think they were like a 44-win team last year. And I think you add Al Horford, and that's like 6 wins. I don't know that Jaylen Brown's going to make enough of a contribution this year as a rookie. I think he'll be really good defensively. I like his potential for playmaking. I'm not going to trust the jumper right away because I didn't see anything in summer league that made me think it was different, but I do think it's workable. I talked with a couple of shooting coaches about his jumper, and they both kind of agreed, like, he needs to restructure this thing. Like, and my idea was like, it's not that bad. Like, it's just a tweak, and they're both like, no, nah, he needs to restructure. So I don't know. I think 50 wins is a hell of a season. I really do. Like, I think it's good enough to win the division. Funny enough, I have Toronto at 50 wins as well. So I kind of copped out there and picked the division winner.
That's a veteran move.
That is a veteran move.
I've done that with a bunch of these where I'm like, I'm picking them for the exact same number of wins. And then we'll just let the tiebreakers sort it out.
I will say, too, that I had them both higher, and then you just have to lop off wins, right? Because you have to have the correct number of wins possible.
Every time that we go through this, like you're like, oh, I think they'll win this many games and this many games. And then the number tells you, I'm sorry, you are 900 wins over. Right. And so you're like, well, I was
78 wins over this year when I first passed through it.
Yeah, it's bad. So you have to go. You just have to go back through and be like, all right, I can't be as high on. Part of it's you can't be as high on every team. Like you have to, and that's you either have to lop off. In the past, what I've done is I've said, all right, well, I'll pick one team to be high on, and I'll duck others. And I've gotten smarter. I just started evenly lopping off one off of everybody. Like that's how I went through. Is I was like, no, they'll all be equally mediocre. and that's how I got the numbers down. I will say the last month the month of preseason, I came in with like, I think I had the Raptors at like 44. And by the end of it, I was like, I think they're going to win 50 games.
Yeah.
Because I just started being like, you know what, Toronto, I think they got a lot, like skinny Kyle Lowry, like they got a lot of things. Now I came in and over the summer, I was like, I think the Raptors will win 2 to 3 more wins than games than the Boston Celtics. And now I'm kind of starting to trend in the opposite direction where I'm like, you know, Isaiah Thomas is really good. Like, we can argue about how good he is in comparison to other players, but independently, Isaiah Thomas is really good. And Al Horford's really good. And Jay Crowder's really good. Like, these are all really good players. In a playoff environment, you're matching great players, and that's a whole different dynamic.
Right.
But for regular season, I think that there's something there. There's a lot of things that they're going to have to be way better on than they were last year. Like a lot of what the Boston Celtics did last year was they kind of get their tail kicked around for a half and be a little bit shaky. They would reestablish kind of their position in the second and kind of hold their ground and trade a few punches. And then the third quarter would come and they would come out of the locker room and just blitz you.
Yeah.
And it would just be this frenetic energy and they would get runouts for easy transition buckets for an offense that struggled to shoot. And they would play hounding physical defense, and they just wore teams out. Like by the end of the year, there were games where like the opponent were just like, I don't know, it's March. No,
calm
I don't.
Down.
I don't want to do this. Okay, you can have it if you really want it that bad. That's where like the effort thing really can kind of come in. Is if you give like a sustained burst in the third quarter, a lot of teams will be like, screw it. Like, I just can't even be bothered to keep up with you. I think they're going to have to be more consistent, and I think teams are going to expect them. I do think it's going to be interesting that they're going to have to deal with expectations this year.
Yeah, like, and I think that can be tough in terms of determining a win total, because you can just look at the additions across the board or the subtractions across the board and say, like, okay, well, that should be 6 more wins, right? Or that should be 8 more wins, or whatever you think it is. But you also have to factor in there is a target on their back. No one's treating them like the Cavaliers, but teams are going to go in thinking this Celtics team, we have to take them down, right? And that's just different. And I don't know how you adjust expected win totals because of that, because that's a tough thing to kind of, you know, value.
Right. Toronto, we talked about a little bit. I've got them. They're over under is
49.5.
Is it that low?
I think so.
49.5. I've got them for the over at 51. I may switch back on this by the end of the month. I may be at 48.
Ooh.
Just because, like I said, I think it's going to be tough. Like, all right, if Jonas Valanciunas goes down, who's center?
Jakob Poeltl or Lucas Nogueira, right?
So if Jonas Valanciunas goes down, who's center?
Jared Sullinger?
Like, this is a concern.
Yeah.
A lot of it is Masai seems to be banking considerably on that young, like the youth kind of coming up into itself now.
Yeah.
Like, it's, you know, like DeLon Wright's going to have to be better this season. They want Bruno Caboclo to contribute. Bebe, they want to contribute. They've got, you know, Poeltl. Poeltl could be, I guess, okay.
Yeah, or he could not.
right?
I mean, I don't know. Like, I,
well, some of these rookies have to be better than we think, right?
Right, and some of them have to be worse than we think.
Yeah. You know, Damari Carroll's still hurt. That was another thing.
That's a scary thing.
Ooh, more Terrence Ross is not a good option. That's not a positive development. I still like their bench unit a lot. I like Corey Joseph, Norman Powell. That's a great reserve
monsters.
Back.
Yeah.
I like Patrick Patterson still at either forward spot. And I will say they do find guys that contribute, and Dwayne Casey is able to coach up guys, but you know, getting to 50, that I think that could be tough. So I'm starting to swing back more towards I think the Raptors are going to go under. I just think that both the Celtics and I think there's the Atlantic is going to be more competitive, and that'll knock off a few wins. And so I do think that the over under in the division should probably be, instead of 51.5, I think it should probably be 49.5.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. I mean, I've got them slightly over at 50 wins, right? Like, I don't feel great about either them or the Celtics in terms of determining their wins. Like, I really do think they're even teams, which is probably how I unconsciously ended up at 50 for both. So I've got the under on the Celtics. I've got the over on the Raptors. If I had to flip a coin and pick a division winner, I'd probably pick the Raptors.
New York Knicks, 40.5 wins. Fool me once, New York, shame on me. Fool me twice, shame on me again. Fool me twice, 30 times, I'm not having any of it. I'm not getting sucked into the over for the Knicks on the third year in a row. I'm not doing it.
Yeah, so this is a talented team in theory, but this is really just a talented starting five in theory, because name me their best reserves. Like, their three best bench players. Who are they? Brandon Jennings. Kyle O'Quinn. Lance Thomas, right?
Yeah, I would say Lance Thomas, definitely.
Yeah. Okay, and then if you don't believe like Kyle O'Quinn is, who's the next option? Sasha Vujicic? Justin Holiday?
Hernan Gomez? That is not a thing.
Mindaugas Kuzminskis, or however you say that guy's name, the Lithuanian's name? You know? I mean, these are the options. Like, they just don't have a deep team. And so, if you don't have a deep team, and you've got Derrick Rose and Joakim Noah in 2016... If one, or God forbid, both of those guys go down for a stretch, what happens?
Every year we talk about the if game, right? The if theorem. How many ifs do you need in order to hit the over? If Derrick Rose stays healthy, if Joakim Noah gets back to where he was 2 years ago, if Carmelo Anthony stays healthy and his game and his efficiency doesn't drop off, like, think about that. Melo's 31. If his efficiency takes a dip with his kind of game, what happens? Like, that ain't going to be pretty. It shouldn't happen. If Courtney Lee can stay healthy and have a consistent year from deep, which he actually has been surprisingly consistent, even though he did, like, he's a streak shooter.
Yeah.
If Brandon Jennings can get back from the Achilles, if they can have multiple guys step up and contribute off the bench, if Jeff Hornacek can figure out how to mend his offense with the triangle, which no one else has been able to replicate, if you do not have Kobe Bryant, Shaquille O'Neal, or Michael Jordan. If Kristaps Porzingis exceeds last year, develops, and is even better this season.
I just don't know that he's going to get the ball.
Right.
That's my problem. Like, I think Kristaps is awesome. I think there's no doubt he's the second best player on that team. I also think that he's just not going to get the ball that much unless he's tip-dunking everything.
I just think there's a lot of ifs there. I've got him for 38. I think there are ways I could see it coming together, but then... Again, it's preseason, so I could see a lot of these teams coming together. I think you just have to be conservative with the Knicks until they prove otherwise. Like, if they come out and they really are good this season, that's going to be a great story. Like, that's awesome. That's good. Like, that would be fun. The Knicks being good would be fun. But there's too many things that we have no evidence of. The only thing that I can really say is I do believe Joakim Noah can bounce back. Like, that's one thing I do believe in. Like, I believe in Noah. Like, I'm not ready to bury him. I'm not there yet. And I think Courtney Lee will be good. I'm not as high on Kristaps Porzingis, though. any statistical analysis of his season results in you being like, nah, yeah, he's really good and he's going to be great.
He's awesome. I just think he's awesome.
I'm a little bit with Porzingis the way you were with Anthony Davis, where you're like, no, he was great. Let's see a little bit more. Like, that's where I'm at.
Yeah, that's fair.
That's where I'm at with Kristaps. I like Justin Holiday. Like, there are guys I like, but they're also, like, I like them not in the kind of roles that they're in.
Right. Wait, so you believe in a joke you know of bounce back season. You mm-hmm. You like Justin Holliday a lot. Mm-hmm. James, you do a great Matt impression. I gotta say, I've been fooled this entire time.
Let's see who's next. Sixers.
Okay, so we're both. Well, I've got the Knicks for 37 wins. We're both in on the under, and I feel very comfortable with the under here.
By the way, the Knicks are 8-1 to win the division. I don't like that number at all.
Just give me your money. Yeah. If you want to, I get the fun of betting the Knicks to win the division, but good lord, they're not going to beat the Celtics and the Raptors.
Right.
That's not going to happen.
The Sixers are 35-1 to win the division.
Oh.
That would be, wouldn't that be a turn?
All right. This Sixers team is interesting. So what's their over under? 27?
27. Yes.
27. Okay. I've said this for 2 years, that give me a healthy Joel Embiid, and I think he can add 10 to 12 wins immediately to your team. I really believe in
Joel
Embiid.
No one adds 10 to 12 wins, except for, like, LeBron.
Karl-Anthony Towns did. They won 12 more games last year or something like that. I don't remember what the number was. But I really think Joel Embiid is that good. Like, I think he is a monster in the waiting, or a monster in a walking boot, or however you want to phrase it. Like, that's what he is. And yet, I feel like this, and I get it, they got better. Like, they actually have veteran depth. Like, they brought in Jared Bayless, they brought in Sergio Rodriguez, they brought in Gerald Henderson. They drafted Ben Simmons. They brought over Dario Saric. Joel Embiid is at least not hurt yet, right? Like, I mean, he's on the floor. Like, there is some real depth to this team with talented players and talented veterans that wasn't there last year. But asking, like, maybe they weren't. They were a 10-win team last year. They were absolutely a 10-win team. Does all of that add 17 wins or 18 wins to this team? I just don't see it. Like, I think they doubled their win total. But that's a 20-win season, right? Like, I think they're going to be bad. I don't think they're going to come close to their over-under total. And I think that's fine. Like, I just think they were that far back in terms of actual talent on the roster. And so I've got them for, I think, 20.
Mm, wow.
Or 21. I have them for 20 wins. Which, I mean, you double your win total from last year. Like, I think that's an accomplished season.
I've got them for 24. I don't love the under, and I'll say why.
Okay.
I think betting on the worst team in the league to consistently underperform is a dangerous bet. I think that's dangerous because eventually, one, things catch up.
Sure.
And two, the good guys get older. Now, the New Orleans situation complicates this a lot. I've heard, like, and people are going to talk, and that's the way that the league is, and maybe it's all nonsense. Like, I have a healthy dose of skepticism with this stuff. I've heard from multiple different places with no connection, really, or no real reason for leverage, talking about how, like, New Orleans is, like, he's just really immature. That's the whole stuff about the house is not an outlier.
It's not. I mean, it's not even the worst thing you can hear about.
Yeah.
And his maturity, like, it's just not.
Yeah. So that's a real complicated thing. I don't love the fit of Embiid next to Okafor. Like, everyone kind of knows, like, no, like, their future is Ben Simmons at the four and Embiid at the five. That's their future. Well, that's two top seven picks that are. Not they don't fit, but not fitting doesn't mean that they're not going to be able to contribute. And then,
right,
they finally have point guards. Sergio and Bayless are going to make them better just by Bayless and Sergio are going to be able to be like, no, 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 go there, don't stand there, come on this side, no, 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 pay attention, no, no, don't look, don't ask about your phone.
And now you've got a shot clock violation, man.
Exactly. You think I'm worried about a shot clock violation with Jared Bayless on the floor? Is that your concern?
That's true.
So
he fires up a 25-footer. He's like, I tried to tell them where to go. They weren't listening. The clock's running. What do you want me to do?
So, Saric, I think, is going to help. There are a number of scenarios where if we play the if game, I'm like, a lot of those ifs sound like, oh, that could work.
Yeah.
I still don't love the under, and I needed wins to give to other teams I like better. So I have them for the under, but I can see a situation in which they scratch out 29.
I don't know. That just seems like a lot of wins to me. For
Teams don't win. That's
yeah, I mean, and granted, this isn't a great way of looking at it because different conference, different year, different players and everything, but like the Timberwolves won 29 games last year. You know, like, is this Sixers team as good as that Timberwolves team? I just don't think so. Although their coaching is much better. I mean, I'm a firm believer in Brett Brown. I get you saying, like, it's dangerous to pick these teams to underperform. I just think you're picking the Sixers to perform if you go under 27 wins. I really don't think it's under. Like, if you were like, no, this team's going to be awful again, 15 wins, that's crazy to me. But I think 20 is a safe number. 20 to 24 is a safe number.
So the projected worst team in the league is the Brooklyn Nets at 20.5. Their odds for the division, by the way, are 200-1 for you Jeremy Lin fans out there.
Oh, man.
It's a great return. I bumped them up. So I knocked off some wins from the Bulls and the Bucks after Chris Middleton's injury.
Yeah.
So I gave a couple of those to Brooklyn. The biggest reason that you should feel good about the under is it would take a huge amount of things going right for Brooklyn to hit the over. And there's always at least one team that lands in the teens. Like, someone's going to win less than 20.
Right.
That's just how that's part of the league equilibrium.
Right. Especially if you have a Warriors team that wins 81 games, right? Or whatever it ends up being.
Yeah. So I think 81, who are they going to lose to?
I figured they just forget to show up one night.
So I bumped him up to actually 19 because I was thinking, I was like, Brook Lopez is an NBA player and Jeremy Lin is an NBA player. Like, those guys are good. But then you see that photo the other day and yeah, it's just tough to see.
I mean, that was their second to third unit. Like, I don't think that's not a fair photo.
It's just tough to see. I guess here's the thing.
It had Jorge Gutierrez and Bo Beach in there.
I guess here's part of it. What are they going to be good at?
Brook Lopez.
Like, I think they could be good.
I think they'll be excellent in the pick and roll.
Here's the thing. They'll be good in the pick and roll. I think they could be really good actually shooting.
Yeah, I mean, Lin's a fine, a good enough shooter, right? Like, Bogdanovich is a fantastic shooter, I think.
Yeah, Bogdanovich, Lin, I'm team Sean Kilpatrick. 100%.
Oh, my God. Buckets on buckets. Absolutely.
Like, Sean Kilpatrick is an NBA player.
Yeah,
100%.
Yeah.
But like, there are guys. So, like, there are guys on this team. You know, and they have some veterans on that bench. Oh, my God, they're going to have Grievous Vasquez and Luis Scola defending off the bench in the pick and roll. Never mind. I like Trevor Booker. Chris McCullough.
Yeah, there's.
I like Rondae Hollis Jefferson.
There's plenty of 20 under 20.5 wins just seems too low for me for a team with this many decent veterans. I've got them for 22 wins, which is not a lot of wins. But I think they take the over.
Do you have anybody in the teens?
No, 20 is the lowest I got.
Wow.
Yeah.
So my entire theory about how someone's going to win in the teens is like...
No, I believe it. I think you're correct.
Can't pick anybody to go that low.
I just didn't pick anybody to go that low.
Plus, man, they they're not going to tank because their pick goes to... They have a swap with the Celtics.
Right, their whole goal is to... I mean, I guess I also, like, and I have no reason... I have no evidence for this, but I like everything I've heard about Kenny Atkinson, so I just think they'll be well coached. You know, like I just think that's enough for like for them to win 20 or fewer games is just too low for me. So I've got them with the over. So who do you have to win the division?
I'm taking
Boston.
As of now, I have the Raptors. I could tell you, bro. I'm gonna go ahead and switch it up. I'm gonna go ahead and I'm gonna say Boston wins the division.
Okay, I've got Toronto on a coin flip. We're surprisingly low on this division.
I think it's more competitive.
Yeah.
You know, even if you think the Knicks could be horrendous. But the most likely scenario is that they're like...
mediocre.
They're just another team. Like, they're like last year. It's like, they're there.
Yeah.
You know? And so there's nobody that you're really going to beat up on. I think that even Philly is going to give teams fits. Like, I think Philly's going to be like, man, what are we going to do with Embiid? Like, damn.
Yeah.
You know, I think, you know, Brooklyn will get beat up on, but I don't think they'll get beat up on enough to boost that over-under. And I look at a part of it, and we've talked about this a lot, like, you don't think the East is good. I think the East is competitive. So I think that it's, And it's also, I guess, partly like, you don't look at the Celtics and be like, oh, they're way better this year, and say, oh, they have matchup advantages over most of these teams. Like, the Celtics win games despite not having matchup advantages.
Yeah, I think they're going to be monsters defensively, right? Like, which is, wow, what a limb to go out on. But I also think, like, just offensively, I'm just not sold yet.
Right.
I think it helps bringing Al Horford in, but I don't know that they're going to run things through Al Horford. I still think Isaiah Thomas has the ball in his hands too much.
Central Division.
Let's start with the Cleveland Cavaliers. Their over-under is 56.5. I feel very comfortable in the under here.
Me too.
Mostly because I just don't think they care enough about the regular season, and I don't think anyone will push them enough for them to worry and just go out and bang out these wins.
I've got them at 54, which still gets them the one seed.
Yeah, I've got them at 53, which gets them the one seed for me.
And I legitimately think LeBron may leave after the Warriors game on Christmas. I think they play them again in January.
So he'll come back for that.
He'll come back for that. I legitimately think he may take like a month and a half to 2 months off. Like, he's already said like he's not ready to get back into it. Like, he's just already tired. I just think he's gonna rest for long stretches this season. They have nothing to prove.
Nothing at all. Because all the attention after winning a championship is on the Warriors, right?
I was on Locked On Cavs recently, and I said, I do believe this. I think they're going to be a better regular season team that wins fewer games.
Yeah, I agree with that. I also think, like, we don't know what's happening with the J.R. Smith thing yet.
I'm not worried about that.
No, but, I mean, like, whether you want to admit it or not, him playing over Iman Shumpert is important for wins.
No, it's hugely important. I'm just not worried about getting done.
Oh, no, it'll get done. I just don't know that he'll, one, be in shape, or two, it'll be quickly enough to where there's not a little bit of adjustment just getting back into the flow of things.
I'm a little excited about Jordan McRae.
Yeah, no, he's going to be awesome for the Canton, whatever their names are.
I think he's good, too.
I just don't think he's going to play. And I think it's like being awesome. I think it's like being excited about Jared Cunningham.
It will be interesting. I think we'll have to talk about this on another pod, but it'll be interesting to see, okay, if the Cavaliers struggle like they did last year or more so, and it just really seems like they need something, do you just trust, like, well, look at last year, or do they make a deal? Not for love, but like for Iman Shumpert, like a small thing.
I think they'll feel comfortable. They're still pretty deep, you know? Like, mm-hmm. Maybe there's some point guard issues there, but I guess they've called about Kirk Heinrich, so they'll be fine. or K. Felder.
I will not take Kirk. No, there will be no Kirk Heinrich slander.
Or K. Felder. You know, maybe he'll be just a spark plug off the bench for them as a young, short guy.
Do you know that Heinrich is third on the Bulls' all-time games played list?
Of course he is. This is like Jason Thompson being the most played Sacramento King ever.
I love Kirk Heinrich. He was really good in 2005. That was 11 years ago.
That's 11 years ago, Matt.
So I will say in divisions, even if we accept that the Cavaliers are going to win, right? We're always looking at return on value, right?
No. There is no return on value of like, maybe you should bet this team to win the division. No, there's no return on value here. The Cavaliers are winning the division.
Pistons at 12-1.
Give me your money.
Pistons at 12-1.
You're not going to get any return on that because they're not going to win the division. This isn't a knock on the Pistons. They're not the Cavs.
You've got 53 wins for the Cavaliers, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
How many do you have for the Pistons?
46.
46.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's 7 wins. So we're very close to that range of randomness.
Matt, if they trade for LeBron James, I will entertain this idea.
But look, 12-1 is great. I'm just saying. LeBron coasts the entire season. They have a year. What was that year that the Lakers like got like the third or fourth seed in the early 2000s?
Oh, 2002. Yeah.
Yeah. They have a year. They have a year like that. Someone gets a major injury and is out for significant time. Yeah. And everything comes together for the Pistons with Tobias Harris, who you love, Boban.
Do I love Tobias Harris? I don't think I love Tobias Harris.
You love him on that team.
I like him on that team more than I like him on Orlando. It's mostly because he's got Stan Van Gundy as his coach.
They've got a better bench.
Yeah, no, I think they're good. They're just not winning the division. There is no value here.
12-1. I believe.
Next team, Chicago Bulls.
No, so let's do Detroit over under. Right. Their over under is 46.5, so you do have them for the over.
No, I have them 46. I have them slightly under, but I don't feel good about this one at all. I would stay away from this one.
Yeah, I have Detroit at 46 as well. I think
you don't even believe the crap you're saying about them winning the division.
No, I like the 12-1 return. I just don't like the over under.
Yeah, I do. I think everything going right for them is a 50-win season, which I don't think is crazy. I think they could do it, but yeah, I think around 46, 47 wins. I think they're a more dangerous playoff team than they are regular season team, if that makes sense.
I almost wonder if we should just do Indiana as a separate podcast.
I've got the over. I don't know what you want from me on the Indiana Pacers.
Okay, so their over under is 44.5.
I've got them for 45 wins.
Okay, I've got them for 46, which is only like a game and a half over.
Yeah.
But I really think this team is going to be good. I really think this team is going to be good.
I've got them for 45 wins. I don't know what you want from me on the Pacers.
I don't like the podcast.
I don't like the fit of Jeff Teague and Monte Ellis. I don't know what you want me to do about that. I just don't like it. I actually wish
Ellis is coming off the bench.
Yeah, I think that would be perfect. But
I wish they would start Miles and bring Ellis off a six man.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. I don't think they're going to do that. They want Monte Ellis shooting more threes. I love the idea of putting more ball movement in the offense outside of Paul George so that he doesn't have to do as much, so we don't go through the last 3 or 4 months of the season pretending he's shooting well when he's shooting horribly. All these things I hope happen. I hope they work, but like, you're just not going to sell me on a Teague Ellis backcourt.
I will say I feel comfortable. I will go ahead and say I feel comfortable in the over for the Indiana Pacers.
I probably feel comfortable even though I'm only a half win over.
It seems like their range, like, they're at least going to win 45, and they could win as many as, like, 49 to 50.
They could easily be a below 500 team.
I don't think so.
Like a 40-win team. But I don't think it'll happen.
Without Paul George being injured, I don't think so.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, maybe Paul George is good enough to just keep them above 500 no matter what.
He's really good. His comments, like he's coming for the crown. Like he wants to be an elite player.
I'm coming for the crown, and I'm bringing Thad Young and Monte Ellis with me. That's intimidating.
Why are we bringing Thad Young into this?
He's fine. I'm not convinced he's a starter.
Ah,
I would like him better off the bench as well.
How dare you?
Does he shoot three? He doesn't even like shooting threes. It's not even that he can't shoot them.
Well, I would say this. He's a guy that I started doing some work on this, and I haven't been able to really put it together, but his mid-range is superb.
It's great,
And his pick-and-pop mid-range is superb. And so he's a guy that spreads the – like Darrell Arthur, he can spread the floor without being a three-point shot. Like, that still creates spacing.
Yeah, maybe. I just – it's worth 2 points.
Yeah. and then finally
– I like the over on them. And then we've got – we still have the Bulls and the Bucks in this division.
Yeah, the Bucks.
I had them so high. I had them at 45 wins before the.
Yeah, you started to buy in a little bit.
Yeah, I really started. But even though they have Monroe and MCW, who I just don't think work for them. I liked the Dellavedova addition. I liked the addition of Telly. Delly and Telly. How can you not? I mean, they rhyme. It's great to add those guys. But that Middleton thing, I just had to lop off win after win after win. I have them for 34, which is under their 36.5.
I've got them at 35 now. I was not as high on them. There was all these Eastern teams, and I just kind of had to flip a coin for who's going to wind up with what.
Yeah.
And I've got them at 35 just because I think Chris Middleton, I just can't get past that two-guard rotation. It's just really tough. I just don't know. I don't know what the offense is going to look like. And the offense was good last year, but, you know, I would stay away from it just because there's a lot of outcomes where Giannis is good and Jabari makes a run and they figure out something. They get a trade for Greg Monroe and like all of these things happen. There's a number of scenarios where this goes, where they go over. I just don't feel comfortable.
Yeah, I mean, if they win 40 games, okay. Like, I don't think that's crazy, right?
I think they could sneak in at 43. I think they could slide into the playoffs.
That sounds like a lot to me.
I mean, Giannis.
Middleton might play 10 games. That's the thing.
Giannis is really good. Like, he's a really good player. And
he's good. Yeah, but I mean, Chris Middleton was 1B for them.
Mm-hmm.
I think Chris Middleton is that good, right?
Yeah, he is.
He's of equivalent value as Giannis. That's how I think, at least right now in their careers.
Yeah. And then Chicago.
So the over under's 38.5. I'm just not buying it. I've got 37 wins. I don't feel great about it. I would stay away from this one. I'm not James saying that he, you know, they're, that it's way under or whatever, but I just don't see how it fits.
I, again, had to, like, just kind of flip a coin on some of this, so I took, I think the topper, the top teams in the, I think 1 through 6 in the East are going to win a lot of games, so I had to knock off some wins. I went ahead and knocked them down. They're at 37 right now. I don't want to take, I would say I don't like the over-under on this one either. Like, there's a lot of stayaways this year, which is annoying, because you want to be all, I want to have hot takes, but,
right.
You know. Look, I like the skill set of Rajon Rondo. I like the skill set of Dwayne Wade. I like the skill set of Jimmy Butler. Do I like them together? No, but I wrote a whole thing about how there are ways it can work. There are ways that you can do this without having the three-point spacing that everyone constantly wants to talk about. Like, there's ways to do it. And Nikola Mirotic,
why are you so against the three-point shot? This is what I don't get.
I like threes. I don't like how much we act like it's like everything comes down to it offensively. We act like everything comes down to it offensively.
I mean, the evidence is there. The majority of things work because of spacing. Now, I think you can make up for with drawing fouls, and I think Jimmy Butler and Dwayne Wade can draw a crap ton of fouls.
Yeah.
To make it's up important. For it.
It's important. I think that there are formulas that can work. I think you need it to a degree. I think you can't be terrible at it.
You can't be terrible at it, and you can't just not shoot them. That's the thing. And I just don't I don't know that Mirotic and McDermott can shoot enough of them to make up for it. Now, I talked about this with James yesterday. I think there's very much a scenario in which Jimmy Butler and his roller coaster career of being able to hit threes one year and not being able to hit them the next, I think we could see an uptick this year to where he's a legitimate, like, league average or better three-point shooter, and that would help things a lot. But I just got to see it.
When I heard yesterday that, like, Wade started talking about how he's going to shoot more threes this year, I started just knocking off wins. I was like... Gone.
I also think it's very possible they win 45 games.
Yeah, it's possible.
Like, there's a crazy wide range of possibilities with this team for me.
They're really weird as part of it. We just don't know what they're gonna look. Part of it also is there's still just a lot of tension with Hoiberg, where the organization 100% supports him and like he's their guy, and yet like Jimmy Butler is just very clearly not like he just doesn't prefer him.
Yeah, I was kind of wavering on the over-under with them, and then I saw those comments from Jimmy Butler about, like, I want Fred to coach me harder, and James, I talked about it yesterday, and I just knocked off a couple of wins right there, and just like, all right, that's it. Like, I got to go under.
And when there are coaching problems, it infects the locker room, and then when there's a locker room, that's when you have things like, I could play tonight, but I'm not gonna. Like, that scenario happens a lot. So that's not great. So we think over-under is like, how many do the Cavs need to win the division?
I could see the Pistons winning 50 games. I don't really think any other team can hit 50, so I'll just say 51.
I think it's going to take 53 wins at least. I think it'll be at least 53.
All right.
And then there is the mishmash that is the Southeast Division.
Who do you feel the best about Charlotte in this division out of anybody?
Really?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
And that's with Ramon Sessions on the team, who, you know, I just don't think is any good.
I began the long, hard walk into buying into the Hawks again. I just decided to slowly climb my way back out of it. And so I would say I feel the best about the Hawks because I have real concerns about the Charlotte bench. But
yeah, that's fair.
I don't know. There's no one I would bet to win the division. And I think that I honestly I have the division winner, which is the Hawks at 44. Like, I think you only need 45 wins to win this division this year.
I'm trying to see who I have. I have the Hornets winning the division.
I have the Hornets just slightly behind. So let's talk about Atlanta. The over-under is 43.5. I have them just slightly over at 44. I think we need to go ahead and say the Hawks are a lock for the over. Can I sell you on it?
Sell me.
We've loved the over on them every year of Mike Budenholzer. The first year they had all those injuries, but we still think that if they had been healthy, they would have cruised past it.
Yeah.
They consistently they are one of a couple of teams whose market just like everything gets deflated when it comes to the books. Memphis is like this. Portland's like this. Like everything gets taken down by the market. And I really think that Atlanta is just always going to consistently be better. Now, we like Mike Budenholzer. They've developed guys well, guys that we would have had like no idea of just suddenly become good when they kind of pop up on the roster. I think that some of the younger guys are ready to take bigger roles. We both agree that Dwight Howard has gotten probably a bad rap for the excessive amount of consideration of how of the idea that how bad he is. Even if he's not great, Paul Millsap is great.
Yeah, I think those are all very cogent points.
Like Kyle Korver is probably going to have a bounce back season because it's a year removed from the injury. He's probably going to have a bounce back season. And if he's not, they still have a number of really good shooters. Splitter's going to be back, and I think that's going to really help them. Like, I just feel like there's so many outcomes where Atlanta cruises past 43.5. I've only gone for 44, so you would think that I would be lower, but I'm only really lower on them because I'm like, I got it. My bigger concern than Dwight is honestly Schroeder. I just really hated the move of going with Schroeder over Teague.
Going from Teague Schroeder to Schroeder Jarrett Jack coming off an ACL injury is really tough.
Mm-hmm.
Oddly enough, they could really use Shelvin Mack in that rotation right now.
Yeah. Dennis can't run an offense. Like, he does stuff. He does maybe more stuff than Teague does. But I just don't trust Dennis Schroeder to be like, okay, let's make sure that the offense is running the way that it needs to.
It's the point. I mean, I think you're really right, and I think I'm going to end up being foolishly wrong on this because I think you're right. Like, we should always take the over because it's always too low. But I lopped off wins, and I have them down to 42.
Oof.
Mostly because of the point guard situation. I'm not crazy about their wing depth. I think they're going to rely on Tim Hardaway Jr. too much this year. Or Mike Scott. I mean, either one doesn't matter to me. Like, I just don't like it. Splitter coming back is helpful. I think we're way too far down on Dwight. And Schroeder's probably better than you and I give him credit for. But I had to lose wins somewhere. And so I ended up at 42. But I would stay away from this one for me personally.
So you're big on Charlotte, huh?
Big on Charlotte. Steve Clifford, man. Same thing as you're talking about with Mike Budenholzer in Atlanta. Charlotte is just perfectly coached every year. Someone tweeted the stat out like a week or two ago. Charlotte, every single year of Steve Clifford's career, number one in turnover rate. They have the lowest turnover rate no matter what. No matter the injuries, no matter the players, number one in turnover rate every year. They don't give the ball away. They're always a top nine team in defense, no matter who is defending the rim. I don't know that I feel good about Roy Hibbert being in the mix here because it does go against a lot of what Clifford has done with his rotations and his big men over the years, but I think Kaminsky will be better. I think Zeller will be better. Michael Kidd-Gilchrist coming back just helps the defense. The offense may suffer a little bit, but I just think this team, like, their over-under is, what, 40.5?
Yeah.
Yeah, this is a 500 or better team, no doubts to me.
Yeah, it's a lock for the over.
Yeah.
I don't like them as much as Atlanta. I think they take a step back, but a 40.5 is absurd.
That's like, crazy to me, yeah.
Like Clifford, Kemba, Batum, that's good for 41 wins. Like that combo easily. With any decent rotation of players.
Yeah.
You know, like Kemba Walker is a good point guard. Like he's
really good when Nick Batum is on the floor.
Yeah. So, and they're probably going to play a lot together because their bench is not good. That's my only concern is that the bench is really kind of rough.
Yeah. I think Sessions is terrible.
They lost Al Jefferson. They lost Lynn.
Bellinelli isn't nearly as good as Courtney Lee. Like, I don't think that's debatable. But it's, you know, he can, as like a fourth guard, third or fourth guard, like, I can see that.
How old is Marco Bellinelli?
How old?
Yeah, guess.
30?
He's 30. I don't like Marco Bellinelli past 30.
Okay, that's fair.
Like, I don't like Marco Bellinelli much, which is funny. I loved him in New Orleans. He was so much fun all those years ago, but now I'm just like, I don't know. Like, he's not a good defender. Like, their wings are Marco Bellinelli and Hawes. They're going to start, by the way. I heard this. I was listening to Locked On Hornets yesterday. I listened to a lot of these Locked On podcasts because it's all, like, really super nerdy basketball stuff. He's going to start Hibbert.
Yeah, that's crazy. I mean, I guess maybe you have to keep him engaged and keep him going.
Like, Clifford really thinks that having the rim protector is going to mean that they can very subtly adjust some things and not give up as many threes. Like, they're going to extend the defense out and maybe send a little bit more help and not leave MKG on the island as much.
I like that idea. I mean, I love the idea of having a rim protector that allows you to just be rabid on the perimeter, right?
Mm-hmm.
I just don't know that he's consistently going to be that guy.
I still like Cody Zeller a lot. I think he's got more in him.
I think he's good.
I'm still way down on Kaminsky. There are some numbers that are surprising, but I'm just really way down on him.
I just think as a backup big man, like, I just think you could do a lot worse.
If you want some a good number here, you get 4-1 on Hornets to win the division.
Love that.
Yeah.
Love that.
Hawks are 9-5. Wizards are 2-1. Hornets are 4-1 to win the division. That's a good number.
Let's talk about the Wizards next.
Okay.
Over under 42.5. I don't know what I have them at. What do I have them at? Okay, I've got them at 43 wins. I believe in a lot of what's going on there. I like Scott Brooks. They've got solid depth. All right, I don't know that they have solid depth. I guess if Tomas Satoransky can...
They got some guys.
They've got players. They have a full roster. I guess if Tomas can be a solid backup guard for them, whether it's shooting guard or point guard, then I believe in it a lot more. I'm not buying this whole Wall-Beal feud or whatever, or dislike that ruins the team in any way. Like, I just think it's a dumb way of looking at it. I think that, like, yeah, maybe they're banking on Otto Porter and Kelly Oubre a little too much, but I think they're going to be... I feel, even though I'm half win over, I feel comfortable in the over. I just don't know... I don't know if I can buy them as, like, a really good team in the East anymore.
I have them only at 42, so I've got them on the under. But I actually... this is another team that I'm starting to kind of be... This is one of my Raptors teams, like, last year, where I'm like... These guys could really be good.
Yeah.
Like if they don't have a chemistry blow up, which is not a great thing to want to bank on, especially when you hear just some of the comments, like all of the media day comments, you're just like, it's just a lot of awkwardness.
Anytime your star player has to release a video online during the offseason saying, "Hey, stop saying I'm watching people's money."
Yeah. It's not good. I think there's a likelihood Gortat is traded, and I think that's going to hurt them. I don't like,
See, I don't mind that because of Yamahimi.
I don't like Mahimi trying to take over for Gortat. I think Gortat's a smarter player. I think he's more mobile on the perimeter.
Yeah,
I
agree with that.
I think he brings, and I will especially say, like, after having, like, covered a significant portion of his early career, and he's a much different guy than he was when he was like 20, but I do not like the idea of Mahimi having to be like an enforcer type. I'm going to be an actual, that defensive presence that's intimidating. That's not a thing you want to do with Mahimi, I think. I just don't think he's there.
I thought he was pretty good for the Pacers last year.
He was good. It's not about the skill. It's kind of about the persona, right? It's about like the attitude and like how you look at them and how players feel about it. Like, I've started to consider a lot more of the stuff the more I talk to guys and realize like how much they're like, I don't care what his rim percentage protection number is. Like, I can drive on him versus I don't care what it says about the numbers. I'm not going in there against this dude.
Right.
Cause I don't want to die. I like their depth a lot, though, actually. Trey Burke, Oubre or Porter, Nicholson, who I'm huge on still.
Trey Burke's not any good. He hasn't been good in 3 years. He had the best season of his career last year, and it wasn't any good.
I think he, like, just as a bench dude, I think it's okay.
He was a bench dude last year. He was behind Howell Neto.
That's
like,
true.
He's just not good.
Jason Smith, I think. I still like, and I think he can give good minutes. And I'm always
crap out of people. Like, he's a guy nobody wants to go in against.
And I'm always going to keep for Marcus Thornton. So
yeah,
I like their depth, but I still have them for the under just because of the numbers. Is it weird if I'm like, I have them for the under, but I think the over's a lock?
No, I like that. I think that's the exact analysis people are expecting from us.
Yeah,
because I almost said the exact same thing about the Atlanta Hawks, but then I decided not to.
I think I'll bump somebody. I think I'll bump them up and take wins off of somebody else, and I'll get them to the over. I'm getting pretty high on them.
Orlando.
Do what?
Orlando 36.5.
Yeah. So this is tough, right? Because Vogel, like, you and I know, like, Frank Vogel's a really great coach.
Yeah.
And 36.5 seems crazy for a team with any talent whatsoever. And yet, I've got him for 29.
Whoa! I thought I was going to be way lower than you. I've got him for 34.
I can't. I know we just got done talking about this, so I'm going to sound stupid. Where's the spacing?
Yeah, I mean that's a problem.
You know, like, especially they're gonna have nights when Vujicic doesn't, and they may trade Vucevic. Like, they may trade Vuce. And if they trade Vuce, like...
I think they should, but...
That offensive combo of Serge and Biombo, oh.
Yeah, that's going to be bad. You know? Unless Serge can hit threes again. But
like, Aaron Gordon's shown that he's better as kind of a wing four, as a stretch four, but they're not going to play him there.
Right. And, I mean, Vogel's talking about, like, you know, early stages Paul George for Aaron Gordon with playing him at the three and all this stuff, and I just don't see that. Like, I like Aaron Gordon a lot. I think he's probably their best player. But
I guess my thing with Elf is I like watching him, and I'm like, he's not a bad point guard. He's somewhere between, like, you know, we're just talking about, like, Trey Burke. Like, he's not that.
Yeah, no, right? He's not that, yeah.
But he's also – he's not Mike Conley.
Mike Conley's awesome.
Yeah, he is. I'm trying to think of even, like, who's, like, a really good up-and-coming.
He's not Jeremy Lin.
Not yet, no.
Jeremy Lin's much better than him.
I think that in time, when his defense already has, like, really good signs, I think in a couple of years he can be as good as Ricky Rubio. Like, I know that that's tough for you, but
well, I just don't think he can be that good defensively, and I just don't think he's going to ever draw fouls like Rubio does.
Yeah,
like, that's kind of the difference between me thinking, like, hey, Rubio could be good, and me thinking Rubio's good is that he started drawing fouls last year, and he's like a 82% or 83% free throw shooter, or whatever it is, right? So, to like, that makes up for a lot of the inefficiency within his offense. If Elfrid Payton starts drawing fouls, like, what is he as a free throw shooter? He's like 60s. He's like in the high 60s or something like that. Like, I don't know what I could be completely off on that, but I kind of thought he was like around 68% on free throws.
I just don't know what to expect from Azonia.
If he plays, I like it. You know me.
I mean, I like the idea. I like the idea of Mario Azonia.
Oh my God! I just looked it up. Elfrid Payton shot a career high 58.9% from the free throw line last year. It's way worse than I thought.
Yeah, that's bad.
Wow,
it's bad. But he's also. I don't know. I think that there's. I'm not giving up on him yet. I still like him to a degree.
I definitely think he's a starting point guard in this league, but it's just not for a good team.
I like CJ Watson still.
Yeah. Sure. Oh, you like DJ Augustine. That's your guy.
I like DJ Augustine.
Yeah, all right. Take the over.
I think they'll be entertaining. I think they'll be an entertaining watch.
I think they'll be super intriguing. Yeah.
Yeah. But I can't buy into it. And I really think that I feel like this is an experiment that they're like, no, this can work. And then they're going to go through this year and be like, oh, this does not work. Okay, we got to do some things. And then maybe they'll figure it out, you know. But
yeah, Vogel makes me feel uneasy about betting this one, even though two and a half wins under is pretty significant for taking the under, right?
Yeah.
All
right. Heat. Bosch is out. Riley said the word rebuilding, which he never says. Dragic said it's going to be tough for a little while. After media day, I just started like hemorrhaging wins off this team.
Yeah.
I think they're going to be bad.
Yeah.
Like, Dragic and Whiteside is not a core.
It's not. The tricky thing for me is just, I have so much respect for Spoelstra as a guy who can minimize inefficiencies within the team.
Yep.
That it's hard for me, but yeah, I mean, they're over under 35.5 after the Bosch news, and I've got them for 30.
Whoa.
Yeah.
I got them for 34. I'll take them still for the under. I think they'll. I may drop them though, man. Yeah, because I'm just.
When you told me, like, look at their depth at power forward. James Johnson, Derek Williams, Josh McRoberts.
And McRoberts has a broken foot.
Of course he does.
Williams? Like, Derek Williams?
He sucks. Like, we got to stop holding out hope.
There is one X factor for those of you considering putting money on the under. Look, if Deion Waiters actually did figure something out last year, that could be a problem.
Maybe. Yeah. I don't know.
Like, Deion became a guy that actually helped you last year. He made a significant jump from dude that gets his to I'm going to help my team win. Now, this is an entirely different setup.
Well, so yeah, really, and I also think, too, like, just the idea, like, even if he plays like he did in the playoffs all season long, how does this team score?
Yeah.
You know? Like, I like Tyler Johnson. I like Josh Richardson if he can be healthy, right? And Justice Winslow is probably better than what he showed on offense last year. But I just look at this team. I'm just like, how are they going to score?
if you're a Heat fan listening to this, it's like, here, if Justice makes the leap, sure, they cruise over the over. If he makes the leap, great. Yeah, I think he'll, and I think the leap is inevitable with him. He is too good, too smart,
too well-rounded, too versatile. I think it's a year three thing for him, right?
Yeah, it's going to take a year. I just think he's going to need another year. I think he had a nice contributing season now. I think it's going to take him another year, and then he'll really start to be a guy that makes a major difference for this team. So we like the Hornets there for the division.
Yeah, I love the Hornets for the division.
I like that number at 4-1.
Yeah,
I still like 12-1 Pistons.
To do what? I think they have a better chance of winning the Southeast than they do the Central.
They're good.
Very good. They're not the Cavs.
Although I will say, like, there's still parts of me that's like, are they good? I'm like talking to myself, and it's 12-1, but at the same time, I'm like, I don't know. Like, Reggie Jackson and Andre Drummond is the core, and I just don't, I don't buy it. I just don't. Right. Drummond's so good, but he's just a guy that I think he's gonna have to get to be 26, 27 before I'm like, okay. Like, he's worked past all the other stuff.
Yeah.
There needs to be a term, there's observational bias, but there needs to be a term for specifically when you're a sports writer and there's an incident that occurs when you're actually at a game and it really influences your perception versus all, like, this is the thing about beat writers and why you should trust them. They're around them day to day to day. So they see the good days and the bad days.
Yeah.
Like, I caught Andre Drummond in Denver on a bad day, and then I didn't talk to him. I saw him sulk through a game, get yanked, not finish the rest of the second half in Denver versus a bad team.
Yeah.
And I was like, which he should have destroyed. Like, Enes Kanter annihilated Denver because all their bigs were hurt. And Drummond got run off the floor. Like, that stuff really sticks with me, especially when you talk to people and they're like, yeah, this happens with Andre from time to time. Do you want to take a break and do the West? Or
yeah, we're gonna split this into two. Okay. Into two. So thank you for listening to the East. The West should be in your feed because I'm not going to post these individually. They're going to be posted together. So and do all that subscribing and 5 or 4-star rating and read our stuff. Thanks, Matt.